This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Om Saturday to our listeners. Welcome to Saturday News number 1007. And today we'll be hearing two talks. One is given by Brother Arvind on the topic of Satasai Omniscience. And the other one is by Professor Venkatraman on the topic of an important communication. So let's get straight into it.
Sai Ram, it is a common practice among Sai devotees to gift each other with photographs of Swami. If not anything, we most frequently give each other those pocket-sized photographs of Swami with the next year's or the current year's calendar behind it. A lot of people I would meet and a lot of them would give me these photographs and they would just lie at home, and at the end of the year I wouldn't have the heart to discard them. So I would keep saying no. If anybody offers a photograph with Swami's calendar behind, I would tell, thank you, please give it to someone else. But on one occasion, somebody gave me a photograph that was extremely beautiful. Of course, all photos of Swami are beautiful, but this one just captivated my heart, and it was also neatly laminated. That solved another of my problems. What was that? I would often forget that the photograph was in my pocket and put my clothes for wash into the washing machine, and the photo would get damaged. But here, since it was plastic laminated, it was even washing machine proofed. And therefore, after a long time, the rare occasion it was when I accepted this photograph from a devotee and kept it in my pocket. Now that evening, as I sat for evening darshan, Swami came, completed the rounds and was sitting on the stage. Now let me also tell all of you that this was the time when I had told Swami about Pooja, my wife now, who was my fiancée back then, and I had also shown her photograph to Swami and got it blessed. Now as Swami sat on the stage, he looked at me and I looked at him, our eyes met, and there was a kind of deep understanding. And Swami smilingly told me, yes, I know it's in your pocket. And I was simply thrilled at Swami's omnipresence and omniscience, you know. After so long, for the first time I had accepted a photograph, and Swami was indicating to me that he knew. I was so thrilled, and that thrill showed on my face, and I opened my eyes wide and I held my pocket and I said, yes, Swami, that is indeed there. And Swami burst forth laughing, and then I saw that everybody seated also were laughing so loudly. I did not understand what happened. It was later that I got to know that Swami had said, now that he is engaged, he will always carry his wife's photograph in his pocket. And when Swami said that, I said, yes, Swami, it is there here. Swami knows each and every thought that passes through our heart and mind. Each and everything we do, each and everything we speak, Swami knows that. I remember how Swami once told a professor, how can you come to darshan without having bath? The professor got up and left for having a bath. And then when he came back, Swami said, when I told you to have bath, I didn't mean that you should apply soap two times. And the professor went to Swami and said, Swami, please don't reveal what I do in the bathroom in front of everyone here. So Swami knows every little detail of our life. And I feel that he cracks these jokes and lets us know through casual situations about his omniscience, because when the dire situations come, we should remind ourselves that Swami knows. Swami is listening to every word I speak. Swami is seeing every action that I do. And that is proved beyond doubt by this jaw-dropping, thrilling, phenomenal experience narrated by Sri V. Srinivasan, a devotee who was blessed by Swami to be the All India President for the Satsai organizations. Apart from being the All India President of the Sri Satsai organizations and also a staunch devotee of Bhagwan, Sri V. Srinivasan was an eminent industrialist. He was also the president of the CII, or the Confederacy of Indian Industries. Now, sometime in the 1980s, he had to leave and go to Chicago for some urgent official work. Now, he was hesitant to go because within a week's time, Swami was to go to Chennai, which was back then known as Madras, and Sri V. Srinivasan often got the opportunity and privilege of hosting Swami in Madras. So, one evening, as Swami was retiring into the old bungalow in Vrindavan, Sri V. Srinivasan went up to Swami and said, "Swami, I have to leave for Chicago on official work. I don't know what I should do." Swami on his own told him, no, you go and you come back soon. Anyway, for almost a week now, I will not be going to Madras. It will be only after that. So you go and you can come back. Now, when he heard this, he felt happy because he was getting the cake and getting to eat it as well, because he could finish his official work and not miss out Swami's visit to Madras. But then, before he could leave, Swami just told, "On your way back, meet such and such a person in such and such a country." And Swami named that country in the Far East. And Mr. V. Srinivasan agreed. And he waited for Swami to give further instructions, because meeting this person, what he was supposed to tell him, he wanted to know. But then Swami changed the topic and then spoke about some other things and then retired. That's it. Swami did not say anything else. Just meet such and such a person in such and such a place. Though Sri Srinivasan was wondering what was this all about, he felt that Swami would guide him and Swami would show him the way, because when Swami gives us a task, he also gives us the strength, the intelligence and all the resources necessary to complete that task. So, Sri Srinivasan left for Chicago. He completed his task there and then called up this devotee. This devotee was living in a city which was almost 14 hours by flight from Chicago. He called him and that devotee picked up the phone. He seemed to be in a mood that was not so good. In a gruff voice, he said, "Yes, Sai Ram." Sri Srinivasan introduced himself and he said, "Swami told me to meet you. So I am coming now. I am about to catch my flight. I will be there in about 14-15 hours. Is it? What did Swami tell you to tell me?" I will come there and let you know. I am just catching my flight now, so see you soon." Now, Sri Srinivasan did not want to give any details because there weren't any details. And the way the man sounded upset and had this rude, almost rude demeanor, he felt that if I tell him that there's nothing to tell you, I just have to meet you, the man might decide not to meet him at all. And so he had just told him that I'll come there and tell you, so that the man is eagerly waiting to listen to Swami's message. And therefore, the 14 hours passed, the flight over the Pacific Ocean with a brief stopover there in the middle of the Pacific. When he reached the man's city, at the customs area itself, this person was waiting. He looked at him and he just said, "Sai Ram, Sai Ram." And then he led him to his car. No words were spoken. Both the people walked silently to the magnificent Rolls-Royce car that had been parked. They sat in. No conversation in the car as well. They soon reached this palatial manor, this palatial home that this devotee had. And then when they went in, now Sri Srinivasan was very fatigued, tired, exhausted. He had finished his official work and had traveled for 14 hours non-stop. It was 2:30 in the morning, but the gentleman offered no room, no courtesy, nothing. Directly walked into the living room and he said, "Tell me, what is Swami's message?" And now Sri Srinivasan said, "Actually, Swami told me to meet you." And that's it. No message? That's all. Swami told me to meet you. "Do you think I'm a fool to believe that you traveled all this distance, 14 hours flight, to just meet me and not carry any message?" This is what it is, however you may take it. Swami told me to meet you and that's it. After that, the man went silent. Sri Srinivas also was silent because he did not know what to speak now. They both sat opposite to each other on couches in this vast, palatial, luxurious living room. Sri Srinivasan half asleep, half wondering what to do. and this man lost in reverie, 15 minutes, just closing his eyes, opening it, staring blankly into space, nothing. Sri Srinivasan was rudely awakened from his fatigue and sleepiness when after 15 minutes this man bent down to his right leg, moved his socks and pulled out a revolver and pointed it at him. Said, "Do you know what is this?" "Yes, I am aware what it is. Kindly don't point it at me." And even as he said this, he began to chant Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Sai Ram, because he felt that his end had come near. For whatever reason, Swami had decided to send him here, and now the send would result in his end. After pointing the gun for a few moments, the man put it down and he said, "You know, just before you called, I was about to shoot myself and take my life." This was such a startling revelation for Sri Srinivasan. Just imagine, Swami had foreseen what was going to happen and accordingly had timed. He didn't tell him that before you go to your work, you call him. After you finish your work, go and visit this person. What timing? Precise timing. And when he called and said, "Swami has told me to meet you," this man who was holding the gun in the other hand, he put down the gun and he had waited. Then the man said, "Swami must have known, and that's why he sent you in the nick of time." And then began a satsang. Both the men began to discuss about Swami, talk about Swami, listen to stories of Swami. What can be more sanctifying in life? Time passed, and that is when the gentleman offered some breakfast to Sri Srinivasan, because that afternoon he had his flight to catch back to Madras. And then Sri Srinivasan told this person, "Swami will be coming to Madras. Why don't you come and have darshan?" The man agreed. He said, "I will be coming to Madras." And then he returned to Madras. A few days later, Swami arrived to Madras. A couple of days after that, this person too arrived to Madras. At Madras, Swami completely ignored this devotee. Did not even look at him for a few days. But after 3-4 days, Swami called him in for an interview. And he also called Sri Srinivasan in for the same interview. And then it was a lambasting. It was a blast. Swami chastised and scolded this devotee, mincing no words. And Mr. V. Srinivasan, Sri Srinivasan, was the translator, was the speaker amplifying this and telling it to him. He chose to ignore a few words because they were very strong. Swami looked at him and said, "You better translate every word. You are just a speaker. Communicate." And then, even as Swami blasted him like this, the devotee broke down, sobbing and weeping like a child, like a baby. He mentioned to Swami about the mounting debts that he had to take on and the business downturn that had happened, because of which he felt that there is no other alternative for him other than to end his life. Swami then stopped him, and all the anger was gone, became completely compassionate, loving, kind. I mean, this only Swami can do, because emotions are just masks that Swami uses to convey a message. Once their job is done, he changes the mask. So now he smiled, lovingly patted him and said, "Past is past. Forget the past. Live in the present. Live with the faith that Swami is with you every moment of your life." Sure enough, after a few months, there was a business upturn. The man could sell his properties for a very princely sum, paid off all his debts, everything settled, everything became good. Dear brothers and sisters, when I heard this experience of Sri Srinivasan, something within me stirred. I just realized that every moment of my life, every thought I think, every word I speak, every action I do, Swami is there, listening, seeing, feeling. How then should I lead my life? Such a loving and compassionate Swami. You know, the kind of thoughts that sometimes come in my head, the kind of word that I speak, the kind of act that I do. Oh my God, I feel so ashamed of them. That only shows the love that our Swami has for us. You know, the Swami loves me the most because He loves me despite knowing through and through, in and out, everything about me. Having known everything about me, if He can continue to love me, He has to be God. And I'm sure that is the case with each and every one of us. Dear Swami, may we increasingly become aware of Your presence in our life on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, on a moment-to-moment basis. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, and this is Radio Sai's old hand, G. Venkatraman, if you please, offering you greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. Do you realize that the sacred town we now refer to as Prashanthi Nilayam once consisted of only one building, namely the Mandir? That is only one example of the way things changed when they came into contact with Swami. While He was with us, Swami changed many things. But most importantly, He demonstrated that changes that are good and lasting are brought about by the transformation of the human heart. The life of the Sri Sathya Sai Avatar is replete with astounding accomplishments, that is, when seen at the human level. However, through His withdrawal in April 2011, Swami also sent a firm signal that it was time we took responsibility for continuing His work and sustaining the legacy He has left for posterity. Now, before I deal with the legacy aspect, please allow me to make a few remarks about Swami's avataric nature, which often gets ignored. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna makes it abundantly clear that avatars come mainly to give humanity a message. In Swami's case, He has, as most of you would remember, absolutely and unambiguously declared that His life itself was and will forever remain His message, period. That said, His message is not the only gift that Swami has bequeathed to posterity. Swami's legacy is much larger, and indeed there are many things Bhagavan left behind for us to preserve, sustain, nourish and develop. As an example, I might mention that currently many of us here are quite busy doing what you might ask. Well, I'll tell you, we are busy archiving hundreds of films, tens of thousands of videos, hundreds of audio tapes and so on. Why? So that those who come 100 or 200 years from now, they also can see Swami giving darshan, they also can see Swami delivering discourses and hear them also, celebrate functions with Him and so on. You know, when Swami was with us, we took all Swami-centered events and happenings for granted. But now, it's an entirely different ball game, and the sooner we appreciate it, the better. Just consider this. Do we have any photos of Rama leaving for the forest? Or do we have any photos of Krishna teaching the Gita to Arjuna? Do we have audios of the Bhagavad Gita as spoken to Arjuna by Krishna? If you ask such questions, the answer is absolutely no. So what I am driving at is that Swami's legacy is something that has to be taken very seriously, because Bhagwan bequeathed that legacy to the whole of humanity and posterity for all times to come. That should be obvious, since God always incarnates for the good of all. Incidentally, has not Swami himself said many times, all are the same to me? He makes no difference between those who are here today, those who will be here tomorrow, those who come from here, those who come from there, those who come from anywhere. They are all the same to him all the time. So it becomes very clear that every one of us has a stake in the preservation and the sustenance of Swami's legacy, which incidentally has many aspects, but all of them directed towards common good. Let me start with the ashram. The ashram is one of Avatar's legacy, but then the legacy of Swami includes also various institutions, the hospitals in particular. And don't forget the concept institutions like the Bal Vikas movement, the Seva Dal movement and so on. So in short, when it comes to sustaining and enriching Swami's legacy, there is plenty of scope for people everywhere to assist and to contribute in a variety of ways. I am not here to lecture to you about how devotees could and should contribute. However, should your contribution be in the form of a donation, I would like to draw your kind attention to some practical details. After all, offering love and heartfelt donations is also one way of sustaining the legacy. Now, in my own personal experience, I have come across many who wanted to offer donations but simply did not know how to go about that process. Many years ago, a gentleman in Australia sent via a devotee a check for some amount. I don't remember the amount, but the point I wish to make is that the check was made in the name of Radio Sai. The funny thing is that the person who sent the check was a lawyer, and yet he did not take the elementary step of checking whether there existed a bank account in the name of Radio Sai. The point is that every bank account has a specific name, and unless the check is made properly, banks everywhere would reject it. You know, you'd be surprised how often such confusions occur. Whether one likes it or not, in the practical world, details do matter. Even today, there are many well-meaning people who do not appreciate that in the current scenario, all donations, indeed all financial transactions the world over, have to conform to specific international as well as national norms. Where donations to charitable institutions in India are concerned, there are clear-cut rules that apply. And here let me bring to your notice the fact that the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, founded by Swami a long time ago, somewhere in the 70s I believe, has been registered as a charitable trust. There are many kinds of trusts, but of these, the charitable trust receives the greatest amount of scrutiny. Swami wanted everything to be above board. Please note that. So, if people want to make any donation to Swami's legacy, that donation must be made to the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, which then allocates funds to various activities it has to oversee. Of course, donors could indicate their preferences about the activity to which they would like to see their donation earmarked. In short, all I am telling you is that in case you wish to make a donation, please do follow the rules as laid down by the government. As is to be expected, there is a difference in the rules that apply when the donation is made by citizens of India living in India and by people from overseas, including those who are not Indian citizens. For your convenience, links have been provided. Now I am aware that there are some for whom the very mention of the word donation is an anathema, and I understand that. Speaking for myself, I have mostly stayed away from discussing donations. If now I have decided to say a few words about it, it is partly because a lot of people do ask us for such information. At times, people send us checks with invalid entries and ask us to pass it on to the central trust, which puts us into a lot of practical difficulty on account of the rules that apply. Please remember, these rules were not made by Swami's trust, but have been laid down by the government. They apply to all charitable trusts in the country, and there are tens of thousands of such trusts in India. Reverting to the point about donations, one cannot hide from practical financial realities. Let's take the ashram for example. It's not perfect, and I agree with you there. But please, do not ignore the fact that people who come here do benefit from the basic infrastructure that has been provided. In truth, the ashram is a small, largely self-contained town with street lights, water, electric supply, sanitation, garbage collection facilities, ambulance facility, security and so on. And most of these facilities are really geared to visitors and devotees. And these facilities cost money to maintain. And that money has to come from the trust. When it comes to running the super speciality hospitals, which, remember, are totally free for every single patient who enters its portals, you know how demanding the task of maintaining and running those hospitals is? I know, because I have visited the hospital any number of times and I have talked to dozens of hospital staff during the years across the entire spectrum. And then there is the Sri Sathya Sai Mobile Hospital. These days, mobile hospitals have become the order of the day. But you know, Swami's Mobile General Hospital is simply out of this world. You don't have to take my word for it. Just see the short video to which a link is given. It is an old truth that private gardens are maintained by private people and are meant only for their own private enjoyment. Community gardens, on the other hand, are maintained by the community as a whole for the common pleasure of one and all. Swami declared that he had come to serve mankind, and so do his institutions. Please remember that. Swami's institutions are here to serve the whole of mankind. So, dear listeners and viewers, especially those who take pride in being Swami's children, kindly do take what I am saying in the right spirit. Simply put, all I am saying is the following. If the good Lord could come down as our beloved Swami for our sake and do so much for humanity during the decades he spent with us, should we not, who bear the same physical form that the avatar donned for our sake, do our bit to sustain, nourish, enhance and build upon the legacy that Swami has left behind? Think about it. Thank you. God bless. And Jai Sai Ram.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.